Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, how we doing?
Doing great. Watch a few lacrosse games this weekend. College lacrosse is off and running. Very excited to see it off. Some good games, but really excited to talk to RJ Swift, the head coach at Tabor Academy.
Yeah, second ISL guest in studio. First for me. I think it's going to be interesting. I don't know much about him. And I don't, again, people that are listening to the podcast, people that read LexJournal.com, I'm learning a lot about the ISL on the fly, and it's interesting.
It is very interesting, and I will say what I know about RJ, don't know a lot about him. Tabor is much more competitive today than they were when he first got the position 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I can't wait to ask him about that. He's got some high-profile recruits coming in. Let's just, cut it down, bring him into the studio, see what he thinks. Tabor Academy's RJ Swift. All right, in studio, not our first, but our second ISL head coach ever on the podcast, Tabor's RJ Swift. How's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me. Quick 45-minute drive up. It's pretty cool to sit between two legends of the game. So,
oh, see? They call me legend now because of you. Why?
Because you've been sitting next to me for the last 6 months.
Oh, it just rubbed off on me?
That's 100% accurate. 100% accurate.
Thank you, RJ.
Wow, all right. I can already see how this is going to go, which is fine. I'm cool with being the backseat driver. RJ, tell me a little bit more about your background, getting into lacrosse, and then how you ended up at Tabor.
Yeah, so I got to start, at Tabor, actually really playing the game for the first time. I'd played a little bit when I was younger, but when I got to Tabor, it kind of became a big deal to me. I really was a hockey player growing up, and if you ask Coach Deneen at Tabor, I wasn't a very good one, but in my own mind, I was. And lacrosse became, a lot of fun. I became pretty okay at it, made the varsity, helped out with face-offs senior year. I had a great senior year, and I knew this is what I was kind of wanted to do. So Coach Salit, who was the head coach prior to me, he said, hey, you should think about pursuing this as a career. Did that, ended up at Lawrence Academy for a few years. And then the same coach, Coach Salit, reached out to me again, said there was an opening at Tabor, and it took me about 3 seconds, and I made the decision to start working there again. And 6 years later, I'm sitting here with you guys talking about the Tabor lacrosse program. So it kind of came full circle for me.
Well, it was 5 years ago, and I was very excited to hear that Tabor – I never could understand why Tabor wasn't in the independent school league. Yeah. And you joined the league 5 years ago, and that certainly has got to help not only your program but drawing more players to your program in the last 5 years.
Yeah, so Tabor was one of the founders of the ISL back in the day. The reason why we weren't a part of it anymore was because we did postgraduates. And when the league went to no postgrads, Tabor said, we're going to keep doing it, and ultimately got not the boot, but they kind of moved on from the league. And so when we re-entered it 5 years ago, it was really exciting. It was exciting. Our scheduling got a lot easier. Our competition got increased big time with schools like Belmont Hill, St. Sabs, Govs. The list goes on. There's a lot of great programs. So it was only a matter of time. And I think our location was really, great for the league too. It's St. George's is right down the road. And to kind of encapsulate the whole Boston area and a little bit south and a little bit north, Tabor was a natural fit. So it was an exciting time, and it's been great. We've gotten great responses from families. A lot of kids are interested in Tabor, and the fact that we're in the ISL definitely doesn't hurt.
How has the process of recruiting, or not recruiting, but getting players into the lacrosse team changed since you've been there the last 5 years?
it's, I think it's evolving every year. You know, more and more kids, I feel like, not just regionally, but outside of the region, are interested in the ISL. You see, you know, there's a kids from New York. We had a kid from Rochester, New York last year who ended up at Albany, actually, you know, on our team. We had South Carolina. We've had, I've had talked to families from Florida, Texas, California. It's been really cool to kind of see what people want, and I think it's just evolved out of kind of the regional area into more of a national picture. I think, you know, schools like Taft and some of those other elite boarding schools kind of have allowed us to be put on the map in that way.
Yeah, and you brought up a point where, good point, where you're a boarding school.
Yeah.
And not all the ISL schools are boarding schools. Majority of them are day schools.
Right.
So that's going to be an advantage for Tabor. Obviously, the if you haven't seen the campus, it's one of the most beautiful campuses I've seen. It's right on the ocean. And but are you drawing, like you said, you're drawing a lot of players from all over the country because now that you're in the ISL and you're, you know, playing at a high level?
I think a little bit, not as much as I think people would give the perception off. I've talked to a lot of families outside of our area, which is nice. You know, you always kind of want to be able to, you know, have kids from all parts of the world. They give a different perspective, different unique environment to our school that I think is awesome for our student body. I'm starting, you know, we've had kids from California, a kid from Canada right now. You know, so it's growing. It's not, some schools are doing it better than us in that way. But ISL is definitely, you know, an attractive league for a lot of people. And so I think, you know, we're at least having those conversations with some players from all over the country.
So my indoctrination into covering high school lacrosse was last year in mm-hmm. Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, MIAA this, and then also ISL. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, it's hard to cover the ISL. And part of that is, you know, there's not a lot of film sharing. I do know a couple coaches from other avenues that have come into the ISL. Ben Rubio at Thayer is the most recent example I can come up with. Why are there so many rules?
Yeah, it's kind of been in place for a long time.
Right.
So I think, you know, as we move forward and, you know, it's 2022, I think we're going to see some shifts. We've already started to see some of that with the playoffs and things, you know, moving to a little bit more of a, you know, 2022 feel to it. I don't know. There's a lot of rules. I'll say that, you know, you try to stay up with them and stuff. So I don't know why we are the way that we are. I haven't been in it long enough to know, but I know that there's a lot of things in place and some of it really beneficial and some of it, you know, definitely stuff I'd love to for us to keep working on and keep moving the league forward because it's such a great league and there's so many great coaches and coaches like Ben Rubio or Adam White, Tim Sullivan, you know, and I'm going to leave people out if I keep going, but there's just so many great coaches and stuff like that. So, you know, as we give more visibility to the league and as things evolve, you hope things shift and continue to move into a more modern day feel to it. And at the same time, there's some great things that they've done in the past that we've been able to kind of capitalize as well.
Right. And part of that structure is the playoff structure that you're talking yeah. about. Can you kind of lay that out, how that works?
Yeah, it's going to be it's something that we've been talking about as coaches ever since I got into the league. It's really, really exciting for us. I think we have there's 16 teams, so we have two brackets now, which will fill eight and eight, and it'll kind of be, you know, the top eight and the next eight will be the two brackets that are formed, and it's all based on record. So you're going to face 11 schools as opposed to 16, and depending on how you do, you enter into whichever tournament, and it's going to have Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, with the championship being on that Sunday. So really exciting time for our league. It's something that I know a lot of coaches have been pushing forward with, and I think it's something that we really needed, and I'm really happy to see it kind of come to fruition this season.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about the MIA Division I, II, and III championships at the high school level. And, you know, I think the ISL gets its due for the competition level and the players that come out of there and are very successful at the college level. But what I think this playoff is going to do is obviously it's going to expose the schools to a number of different people, maybe even on a national level, New England level, but obviously going to give the players an opportunity probably to be able to play in front of some college coaches and people, fans that, like my co-host Kyle, to actually be able to watch the playoffs, which is really exciting. Question for you. Talk about top eight, bottom eight. Yeah. How do they decide who's the top eight and the bottom eight? I know it's record, but the following year, you get seated on who you play and who you can't play during the regular season. Like this year, you have 11 games, but you said that earlier before we started this broadcast that you're not going to play St. Sebastian's.
Right, right.
So how did that come to fruition?
So Adam White is the architect behind all of this, and he's kind of put in a schedule that, you know, you're all facing kind of the equivalent based on prior records. I think it was the prior 3 or 4 years he went back and kind of put it all together and put in a schedule for everyone to face kind of the equal level of amount of talent. And every, I don't think it's going to be evaluated every year. I think every 2 years you reevaluate and see what your schedule should be based on that. So I'm probably not the right person to ask that question to. Adam White definitely has done a phenomenal job of putting this together. So I think every couple years we'll reevaluate and kind of see where the different programs are based on their level, talent level, all of that, and put together schedules that are both hard and fair at the same time.
So the reason for the playoff, obviously, is to have a champion because over the years you've had co-champions and three teams that would tie for first place. And it gives teams a chance to play somebody they may have lost during the regular season and beat them in the playoffs. So when you're in the bottom eight, and you make the playoffs, are you able to play some of the teams in the top eight?
In
the playoffs?
No. Once you're in your eight, you're in your eight for that playoff bracket. But, like, for me, we play, you know, Belmont Hill, Governors, St. Mark's. We don't play Thayer. I'm trying to remember all the schools.
St. George's.
But yeah, we play St. George's. So you play a kind of a whole host of schools leading into it. And, you know, and then you're in your bracket. So once you play, once you lose, if you lose, you still play another game, but it's someone within that top eight or bottom eight, wherever you kind of fall into of where you're going to play and who you're going to play. So you don't cross over in the playoff time, you know, especially after that. If you lose the first game, you're still playing within that bracket. But the exciting part is kind of what you referenced to is the championship, is being able to crown a champion at the end of the year. And the nice thing too is as a coach, I'm hoping that we're in it. I think we have the ability to be in it, but if we're not, we're going to go watch. And I think that's a really cool thing. And coming together as a league that final Sunday and the ability to get seen by local college coaches and probably some coaches that are not so local, and this, which is a little tough in the springtime. So I think it's going to be great for our league visibility wise.
So during the regular season, there's going to be equal balance of competition, which is great because you've had some non-balance season schedules over the years. So that makes it a better league, number one. And number two, it gives everybody an opportunity to play for a championship. So whoever plays in the playoffs has to win three games to win the championship. So in terms of the number of games you have with the playoffs, is the same number you would have in the regular season as well.
The exact same. Yeah, which is nice. So we didn't lose anything, which is really great. I mean, and that's the biggest part. We want to give our kids the opportunity to be seen and compete at the highest level. And the hope with the playoffs is that we'll be able to do that.
And those games are going to mean more.
Oh, yeah. They'll mean a lot more. And I think it'll be, I think, you know, I would talk about it with the boys all the time about what that means and what it'll be like in that scenario if we're able to get there.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
Looking forward to watching.
Let me ask you, because you're part of the admissions process getting into Tabor, but you're also the head coach of the boys lacrosse team. What is your role in helping your players get to the right college for them?
Yeah. You try your best to talk about feel, you know, and go where you're wanted. I think a lot of the time I'm spending now is not so much convincing, but trying to articulate all these schools present. When I talk to a student athlete about the potential to move on and play college lacrosse, number one, it's really hard. You know, you're going to have to put a lot of hours in, you know, and a lot of effort. You know, Division III is an incredible, incredible place. You know, Division II is an incredible, incredibly good place to be. Division I is even harder. So I try to educate them on all the different opportunities that they're going to have. And the hope is that you get them to a point where they go where they think they're going to play. And they use lacrosse as a vehicle to get them into a school that maybe would be, you know, if they were just a regular applicant, maybe it would be a little bit tougher to get into. So, you know, I want kids to go where they're wanted, and I want them to go to places that want them.
So let me ask you a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
Because I think that's very key. That I think a lot of – I'm not casting shade on parents. Just want to be clear. But
– Me neither.
I want you all to know, as I coach too. I work with parents. They're sensitive people. I get it. Lacrosse is not going to pay for your school. Lacrosse will help your kid get into a better school. How many times have you had to say that to someone? Hundreds?
A lot.
Right? Yeah,
a lot. Use lacrosse as a tool.
Yes.
That's what we talk about. I'm sure Coach Piatelli talks about that within his program too. And it's such a great sport, and to be able to play it at the college level is hard. And to, you know, kids, I think at times are so, you know, like, I want to play Division One. I want to play Division One, and they lose sight of, you know, going to a great institution with great coaching,
yeah,
and great facilities and great opportunities for them. I think about all the Division III athletes that are now playing at the highest level, Division One, that have transferred in and absolutely killing it at the Division One level. The kid who went from Gettysburg to Syracuse always comes into my mind. The Rogers kid from Lynchburg to High Point is now playing in the PLL. So, I think using it as an opportunity to go where you're going to play and enjoy the experience and having that balance, and whether that's Division I, that's awesome. You know, I always, yeah, you know, if you want to play Division I lacrosse and you're able to, great. I'll support you 100%. It's Division II, same thing. Division III, same thing. It's about finding the right fit. And I think that's the most important part. And, that's the only thing that really matters to me.
How do you approach the conversation with the student athlete that wants to play D1 but probably isn't going to play D1?
Yeah, it's a tough conversation. It's not an easy one. I don't know if I've mastered that quite yet. I think it's a tough thing. You just provide options, I think. You say, you know, these are great institutions that I think you should also think about. And, you know, sometimes they're receptive and sometimes they're not, and that's okay. You know, you just try to do your best to support that kid in that moment. And, you just try to provide them different things and, you know, and say, hey, this coach is going to watch you play. You know, you make sure you reach out to them. Make sure, you know, this is a great place. And again, I love when kids go and play at places and where they can play and have fun and enjoy what they're doing.
So I have a young son who's interested in prep school, mm-hmm, and he's looking at a number of different schools. Tell me, what is it about Tabor that will draw me to your school, and what do you offer as a boarding school in the ISL that I need to know and should know to pique my interest?
Sure. Well, I think you talked about it a little bit is kind of the beauty of it. We have a half mile of shoreline. It's pretty cool, you know, to be able to, you know, try different things is important. And I think that allows us to try different things. You know, a lot of our kids will do marine science programming, and they'll go and do our things on the 93-foot schooner that we have. It's pretty amazing what they're able to do if they're willing to do it. Like, sometimes you have to push those kids to be like, hey, like, take a risk. It's okay to take a risk. And, I think, you know, you come to a place like Tabor, you know, you have some structure. You know, there's study halls, there's, advisors, people that, you know, it's not unique to Tabor, but things that are in place for you to be successful. You know, if you're struggling in classes, there's 1:30 to 2:00 every day. You can go see your teacher. and the teacher is available, has to be there. I think that's important, you know, to start advocating for yourself as student athletes. I think too is that, you know, the other thing is, you know, we have two of the best assistant coaches, I think, out there in the whole league. You know, you have Ian Patrick, who was the coach at Tabor from 1996 or 1995 to 2007. And then Paul Salit, who was the head coach at Tabor from 2008 to 2018. And those are our assistants. And they're high-level coaches, and they've coached college before. And, I mean, you know, I'm the low man on the totem pole in terms of experience. So, you know, there are two really great assistants that are phenomenal to what we do. And, you know, we have a great admissions office that wants lacrosse to be important, and, you know, not just lacrosse, but any program to be important. You know, and that includes, you know, even the drama program. They like programming. They want experiences that are positive for our kids. So that's really great. Eric Long is a great boss, and I call him the GOAT for a reason, you know, because he's the best, I think, in the ISL in terms of being the director of admissions. He's really good at it. So I think there's a lot of reasons that Tabor is an attractive place, and I think boarding school is an attractive place. I've been through it. I love it. It's it created a lot of structure. I became independent. I advocated for myself, and some things that now are easy to me were really hard when I was 14. So,
you have a number of, I would say, fairly high-profile D1 recruits. You know, mm-hmm. just we were talking about great fits. Seamus McCarthy going to Utah, Tim McNamara going to Denver as a goalie, Aiden O'Neill flipping from Utah to Richmond, which is actually the first time I talked to you.
Yeah.
How much does your relationship with college coaches help you find the right schools for these kids? How essential is that? Are your connections in the upper levels and even lower levels and other sides of lacrosse help you get them to the right place?
Sure. I think those three are phenomenal kids. I think they're phenomenal athletes. I think, you know, you lean on the people you know a little bit. In this particular case, I don't really know, you know, those coaches incredibly well. I did talk to Coach Tierney and Coach Hogan from Richmond and Tierney from Denver about those two. And, you know, Coach Hogan, it was actually really early on. It was before September 1st of his junior year. So before he was even considering Utah, they had reached out to me about him. You know, I think as I've gotten older, I've been able to develop relationships, but a lot of these kids have been able to show what they got. And I think, you know, a lot of it's their ability to play, but also, you know, I think the nice piece is they have great advocates from our coaching staff, but also from their club programs, which is incredibly helpful as well. So we try to tag team it as best we can, and we try to provide opportunities for them. Seamus isn't at Tabor anymore, actually. He's doing a post-grad at Salisbury School right now, and he's going to have a great career over there for a year, and we're super excited for him. But for those guys, it was, you know, working through the progress was, you know, I got a few phone calls about guys, and I was able to talk to them about them. Oh, what do you think about this school? What do you think about that school? I think it was good for them to kind of see, well, what works for them. Yeah. What type of school are they looking at? Are they looking for big, small? You know, do they want a big university where they, you know, have the big football programs, or do they want something a little bit closer knit? I don't know. But we try to kind of work through that, more that type of stuff than necessarily you know, going out and being like, hey, Coach Tierney, you know, what do you think of Timmy Mack?
You kind of touched on it there. And, you know, I'm always curious about the role that club teams play in the process, mm-hmm. as well as the coaches of the high school teams that these players are on. So I know for me, I'm a high school coach, and a lot of my kids don't play club because I'm in a very small school.
Sure.
But the ones that do always talk to me about it and talk to me about their coaches and ask me who I know on their club coaches. Right. How important are those relationships to you for these guys? Because a lot of your guys are Lacrosse guys. You've got some 3D guys as well. Yeah. Is that like a strange tightrope to walk, or is that just easy? It's just for whatever the kid wants.
It's easy. I think when you have the best interests of the kid in mind, it's easy. You know, for me, like, it's all about the kids. It's all about them. I don't really mind, you know, what schools they go to or anything like that. It's more of just like, hey, what do the kids want? And I think we all work together. I think that's all our best interests put together is what kind of works out for the the best for them. You know, I talked to you about Mike Shaw, you know, coming to Tabor. He's a great kid. He's at Union now. That was a great fit for Mike Shaw. And that's and I think you talked to him about it. I talked to him about it. And it was like, I couldn't think of a better school for him to go and be successful. And if you have that in mind, I think everything else is easy.
Yeah, yeah, Mike Shaw played for Piattelli Lacrosse and a good lefty attackman.
Great lefty attackman.
And it's funny, Mike's older brother played at Providence. Nick ended up being captain at Providence. But Mike, I give him a lot of credit, took a different route, you know, and I think he realized he probably wasn't big enough, strong enough to play Division One, but he focused on his academics. Yeah. Union is not a very easy school to get into, and you gave him some advice. I gave him some advice. Yeah. He worked hard, developed, and from the day he was in the program to the day he left, he was 10 times the player he was. And, you know, we talk, and I know you do. It's a process, and it's really the kids got to want it.
Right.
You know, they got to want it. And academics, we talk about it all the time, is that's really opened so many doors, the academic piece.
It starts and ends right there. You know, you can. I tell the guys all the time, you can shut a lot of doors before you even have the opportunity to open them.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
I'm very new to the ISL.
Sure.
Build me a good ISL team. What do you need first, second, third, fourth, and fifth in terms of players? What do you need to be successful in that league?
I think it starts down the middle. I think it always starts down the middle. You know, how good is your goalie and how good is your faceoff guy? I think you kind of start there. And then you can kind of, you know, you need a scorer. You need someone to kind of get you into offense, and I think you need a good two-way midfielder now, especially with the shot clock. So those are my first four, and then an elite defenseman is probably fifth. So when we build like the ideal roster, which is impossible at boarding schools, you know, you can't recruit the way that you would in college and stuff like that. But what you try to do is bring in really good kids that love your school that are going to work really hard. And then, you know, but you always start down the middle. You know, we have a good goalie. Timmy McNamara is you know, obviously Denver loves him. So, he's a phenomenal kid. He's one of our proctors on campus. He's a fantastic goalie. So you kind of start there. And then the next part is faceoffs. And, we haven't been the face-off team I've wanted us to be. We have a really good, talented freshman that's in the that will be in the mix this year, along with A.J. Boxler, who returns as a senior, who's been very good for us the last year or two. So I like those two pieces for us. So I think, you know, that's where you start, and I like where we started.
What is your team's style of play?
It changes. It really depends on who's on your roster year to year. I think if you try to create something that they're not, then it becomes really, really hard, and you lose more than you win. And, you know, I think, like, kind of what I was referencing earlier, you can't really recruit like you do in college, where you can kind of build around a roster around guys that you know can play a certain part. For us, you're trying to bring in the best kids that you can, both academically, socially, athletically, kids that are going to buy into the program a little bit. And so I think that, you know, this year we'll try to play a little bit faster than we have, because I think we have the guys to do it. But year to year, you try to do what's best for the 10, 11 guys that are on the field and the 20 guys on the bench.
Yeah, that's actually a really good answer. And I feel like people will be like, oh, he didn't really answer that question. But I know that you did, because if you try to jam a style down a team's throat and you don't have the horses, you can't run that style. So you actually have to be a very good coach to pull off different styles of play. Yeah. Which I think is super important, especially in a league as competitive as the ISL.
Got to be creative. You got to, you know, I think I've learned that over my last 5 years, is that, you know, at times I've tried to be like, oh, we're this team or we're that team. And I think this year I've recognized that, you know what, we have different players year to year. We have different kids. We have different mindsets. We have, you know, when we're able to think about it creatively and in a way that's productive for them, I think we have a really good situation.
To your point, you have to coach to your players' advantages.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And play to their strengths.
Play to their strengths. Yeah. College can recruit players for the system that they actually coach, and they want to continue to coach because they believe in that system. Right. Do you have a number of multi-sport athletes on your lacrosse team?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, not all of them, but most of them. You know, a lot of hockey players. A lot of football players, some wrestlers, soccer, a couple basketball players, which is great. I think that's an important part of growing up, being a young adult is trying new things and putting yourself out there. I also think it has a lot to do with being competitive. You know, if you're just playing lacrosse and you play 100 games in a year, what does that one high school game mean to you? You know, we have plenty. Listen, I love lacrosse just as much as the next guy, but I think it's important for them to get coached by somebody else too.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you could be the best player on the lacrosse team and the worst player on the soccer team, and it gives you a different perspective on, you know, what it's like to be a good teammate.
Roles.
Role, what's your different role? What is your role? So you truly believe in multi-sport athletes. Do you recruit players from other programs to come try out for lacrosse?
Sometimes. Yeah, I think at freshman year, there's a lot of great athletes that don't know what they're doing sometimes. It's funny you bring it up. I just had a conversation before I left work today with a kid, and I'm like, hey, pick up a lacrosse stick. I think you'll really have a really good experience with it. And he was like, I think I might, coach. And, you know, you don't know what that kid might turn to. It might be nothing. But the more we have kids playing lacrosse, the more sticks that are in kids' hands, I think is an important part. And, you know, they're going to add to the JV experience or the thirds experience as well. And they're going to have fun doing it. And you never know. Once in a while, you might come across somebody that can really, really help you. And all of a sudden, they're the reason why or that you're winning. And whether it's D-MIDI or something like that, or you never know.
So how many kids do you have in your program? You have a varsity program, you have a JV,
and
you have a thirds, which is basically freshmen?
Yeah, it's really anyone new. This year we don't have thirds. We have enough for JV and varsity, which is great too. Not every year we have the thirds program. So kids like that will be on JV, and they'll find the right moments to play in games and to get that experience. So yeah, we usually have like 50 to 60 kids in the program. That's our usual number.
And the JV plays their own?
Yeah, this year they'll play their own schedule because of the what they call in the ISL is decoupling from lacrosse, from the actual, like, because you go every weekend, every team that goes to school at Tabor is playing the same teams from Middlesex that weekend.
Right.
This year, it's not going to happen that way. So we'll have a different schedule than every other sport.
So how big of an impact was last year's kind of, I don't want to say limitations, but rules for you guys, and how has it impacted the development of the team now? Like, is it remarkably different, or is it just, well, this is a thing we have to deal with, we're just going to put our best foot forward?
Yeah, I think last year it was a lot to, like, what we were dealing with. Like, all right, we got to, you know, we're going to try. We had fall preseason practice, which we've never had before, which was both good and bad. You know, definitely things that I could learn, because I've never done it before. I've never coached in the fall like that. And then the winter was like a lot of just, you know, speed lacrosse and stuff like that. And then spring, you know, it wasn't a very certain time. So you were kind of like, how many games are we going to play? How, you know, who are we going to play? And you didn't know sometimes till the week before who you were going to play. So, like, and sometimes just day before, you would just go out and play whoever was willing to play that week. So, it was interesting. It helped me develop better as a coach for sure. And I think it players to be a little bit more flexible, understanding and creative and trying different things and what works and more importantly, what doesn't work. And I think we found that out. And I think we're primed a little bit better this year to face this a little bit more head on. And it looks, you know, like we're going to be in a good spot where we're going to play an 18, 19 game schedule. And we're going to go up. It's not an easy schedule, I'll say that. I went out and tried to find some really competitive teams, and just because it was we hadn't done that, hadn't had that full season experience in a couple of years. So
I work kind of moonlight on the side a little bit with some Lakes Region guys. Yeah. Do you have any Lakes Region guys in your schedule?
We do.
Who is it?
It's Kimball Union.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They're very good.
They're very good. They're old.
Yes.
And when you face old teams, you know, they're always a little bit, you know, they're tough. And Nick Antal does a phenomenal job up there. So it'll be a lot of fun. And I think we're going to play at Tufts, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What do you know what day that is? That sounds awesome.
March 26th.
Okay.
So I'm working on the facility. It looks, you know, they seemed optimistic about it last time we had the conversation.
Well, Casey is a friend of the podcast, and now you've been on the podcast. So all you got to do is...
Well, I already reached out to Coach Moreland. He's a good friend. So I was like, you got to make this happen. I'm excited.
He's also great.
Yeah.
He's been on as well, right? But not with me. Just you.
Steve Moreland. One of the best.
Legend.
Legend.
He's the best.
Yeah. He's a real legend.
The best.
He is, unlike you.
Yeah. Legend by proxy.
You just love to set yourself up.
I do.
Exactly.
Listen, I'd like to take shots every once in a while. I deserve it.
So back in the day, I went to the Kent School.
Right.
I also went to Springfield College. Just
God.
Wanted to remind
Kyle
of
that. It's been three podcasts.
I've finally listened to a few.
Finally.
When I went to Kent, they required all the students to, we had to do an activity.
Yeah.
Fall. Winter, spring.
Right.
Is that the same now at Tabor?
Yes.
Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so what we qualify for our activities is you have to do two team-oriented activities and one, you can do one individual. So there's some kids who play three sports. That's what they do. There's a kid from Connecticut who plays for two waves. I think he's going to be a very good player for us. He played football, basketball, and he can play lacrosse in the spring. You have some of those kids. You have some kids that will do the fall drama, the winter musical, who are a little bit more arts driven, and those spring one acts, you know, those count as team activities. And then you have, you know, some kids in my program that will do intramuros as well. Like, so there's some kids who will play intramural hockey in the winter, you know, and having never done it before, wanted to try it. It's a fun, fun thing. It's also hilarious. Timmy McNamara and Aiden O'Neill skate on the ice. We've never done it before.
Yeah, it must
and
be great.
Yeah, yeah, it's hilarious. And there's a lot of kids who do it. You know, Jackson Chase, you know, it's cool. It's a lot of fun. It's meant to be, you know, a little bit lighter, but it's also meant for them to try something new. And I think that's what we all want. Like,
absolutely. And you said fun. It's a lot of fun, right? What other programs do they have? Intramural programs. You talked about intramural hockey, and what other programs do they offer?
Volleyball, intramural volleyball, intramural squash, if you never learned how to play that. Sailing, if you've never sailed before. Crew.
I'd love to go out in a sailing boat with you. I'd come back, but you wouldn't.
Yeah, that's why. I don't know if you know this. I have a no boats policy. No boats.
I can't see you in a boat. No, I don't think you can ever get a tan either, by the way.
Look at these lights. I'm lit so poorly in every podcast. It's
fine. You got a little good Italian blood in you, you know?
I know. I'm Irish. Yeah, I got the other side. Yeah. I bottle it.
I wouldn't be able to tell you were Irish, that's for sure.
Yeah, pretty sure you can. Pretty easy to find. I mean,
back to RJ Swift.
No, I love this. This is awesome.
Yeah. So do you still offer PG year at Tabor?
We don't. No. Post-grads.
Do you think that affects a lot of the ISL? Because I know a lot of other private schools kind of do offer that as an option. And, you know, instead of reclassing, I think people have tried that. And now people are doing reclassing instead of PG year.
Yeah. I think it, you know, I don't really have too many thoughts about it. I think the nice thing about being in the ISL with no post-grads is that kids don't feel as though there's going to be a kid that comes in as a post-grad over them. Not that I think it happens often, but I think, you know, every once in a while you're like, I wish I could bring in that post-grad goalie because we got a freshman and we're just not quite, he's not quite ready yet. You'd have those thoughts, but not too often. And, you know, for the most part, it is what it is. And those programs like Kimball Union that do a great job with their post-grads and have a great program for them, you know, those kids thrive. And I think for us, it's just a little different. And that's okay. You know, I don't ever really think about it.
Wasn't the reclass the new PGA?
Anyway? Yeah, it's the same. You know, there will be kids who will be 19 when they graduate Tabor. So,
right.
Yeah, and I also think that taking that extra year, repeating your junior year and going to Tabor and spending 2 years at Tabor versus just taking the one post-grad year is much more beneficial for the coach,
absolutely,
the player.
They're ingrained in school.
Yeah.
They buy in a little bit more. You feel like they're there for more than 1 year. I think that's important.
I PG'd, and I have no friends left for my PG year. I did it. It was hard. Like, PGing is hard. I think getting that 2 years, and it's controversial because I meet and talk to a lot of parents and a lot of coaches that hate the reclass.
Yeah.
And they like, we'll do a recruit list, right? It'll be, you know, 22s and 23s, and parents will just be so upset if their kid if they reclass and then the kid's not on the commitment list or he changes commitment or something. And it's like, why are you upset that you've chosen this?
Right.
You know, like, you can't go back on it. People want to do it by birth year and all that stuff. Right. And I think lacrosse, it's such a slippery slope for that kind of adjustment.
Yeah.
You know, but I do see value in the reclass, especially because of the COVID. Now all these college players have extra years. Has that really impacted what you're doing at all yet?
Oh, 100%, yes. There were kids that are at Tabor right now that I was like, "Oh, they're going to be a sophomore. It would be great for us as a sophomore." And their parents come to me and they say, "You know, we just need an extra year. We're not liking what we're seeing above in terms of college, and we want to be able to kind of, you know, have an open, opportunity. We don't want it to be log jam. I don't know what it will look like in the future. I think by 2024, 2025 will be a lot different. But, you know, I think giving themselves an extra year to get recruited and an extra opportunity, I think a lot of people are jumping at right now.
Well, the other part of that is you don't know what's coming. You don't know how many other people are doing that.
Right.
So it could be just as bad. It could be worse.
Right.
That's the thing that I struggle with when people ask me about it. I'm like, well, is it the right thing for your kid to do? Right. Is it, you know, did a college coach tell them to do that?
Right.
And then they'll get into the school they want to.
Right.
Or are they just trying to open up their options? Which, there's nothing wrong with opening up your options, but if you're reliant on that,
right,
that's where I feel like it becomes a little bit of a problem. No. Right.
No, it does. And I think the post-grad, a lot of coaches are using it. A lot of college coaches have used it quite a bit. You're seeing a lot of kids taking advantage of an extra year just because of rosters being so big You know, Denver, what did they have, like 70, almost 70 kids last year?
Yeah.
So I think they're using that as an opportunity to take an extra year, get another group of kids through, and then bring in, you know, bring in an actual class of 25 this year. So it's definitely an interesting time right now. And you just try to navigate it and try to give as many, you know, different things. Seamus McCarthy took an extra year at Salisbury, you know, and he maybe not have gotten Utah if he didn't.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I've known a couple of players, coaches have called them and said, you know, we'd love for you to come next year, but we don't have a spot for you because right. we have 9 attackmen on our roster. Right. But the following year, we'll only have 5.
Right.
But the thing is, you're still going to have to beat those guys no matter what, right? Like.
But they don't really have a roster spot for them. They want it. Yeah. So take an extra year. Go to wherever right. it is.
Yeah.
You know.
Too is how big are these athletic directors going to let their rosters be too at the college level?
It's out of control right now. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Well, I know of a few schools. I won't mention them, but I know of a few schools that have said to me that their ADs have told them that their roster sizes can't be as big.
Yeah, so, no, I've heard the same thing. Yeah. To be honest,
tell me a little bit about your schedule and how do you think your team is going to fare this year?
All right, into the meat of it. I love it. It's a really hard schedule, I think. We will scrimmage St. Sebastian's on the 19th or 18th. I forget the day, which is exciting for us. I think that's a good opportunity, especially because we won't see them in the regular season to face someone, you know, pretty talented and, you know, see what our weaknesses are, see what we need to work on, see what's working and see what's not and do all that. And then we'll play around 18 games, I think, total. We open with Kimball Union. And then it kind of goes from there. It just goes really fast. I think Dexter's next. Then we'll play Trinity Pauling in the Hartford area. Nice. That will be a good one for us. Coach Kirkcaldy out there has done an amazing job in building up that program and getting it to where it is now. He's done a really good job. And
yeah. I'm a Rock Hopper. I got to give a shout
absolutely.
Out to
Rock Hoppers.
Rock Hoppers.
And then we'll play the Naval Academy Prep School. So that will be good. That's our preseason. I don't, you know, all teams that are pretty good and competitive, and that's what I wanted. I think that's what the guys wanted too. You know, when I presented it to our captains, they said, play.
So you're going to play all those games before you start your ISL. That's actually nice.
Yeah, that's the difference because of
the schedule now in the playoffs. So it allows you to get all your out of league games
done.
Yeah. And actually get you better prepared for the actual league. I like that a lot. Yeah.
It opened up like 2 or 3 dates for us to try and to go play at Trinity Pauling, which you would never really have that opportunity before. So we're going to go play them on a Saturday, and we're going to give it our best shot, and we'll see what they got. But I think it's great for our league to be able to do that, to expand a little bit. And I know of other schools doing similar things and competing against schools that are really, really talented. So. That are outside of the ISL and some even outside the region.
I think with the ISL, again, and I am approaching it still as an outsider. I have not been accepted. Sure. It's fine. We're still working.
Yeah.
That's why we have you on.
Yeah, for sure.
We're working on it.
Yeah. I'll spread the good word.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. How does the rest of the country come to see the ISL? What can the ISL do to get more kind of exposure, I think, because a lot of I follow all the teams' Twitter accounts and all the Instagrams, and not a lot going on.
Yeah, I think it's always, you know, tough for us because we, you know, a lot of us work at the school, so we're like, like I'm, you know, I just did 4 straight nights of duty, so you know, you come off
dorm duty,
duty, it's fun. So I think I try to keep up with the opportunity on social media to keep them. I think the way we do it is. It's to continue to bring these things exposure wise, you know, live streamer games, I think needs to be at the forefront for all of us. I think all these schools need to make that a priority. You saw it this winter with basketball and hockey and squash. I mean, our squash coach set up 5 cameras because he has 3 kids from Columbia. So for their parents to watch a match.
It's amazing.
Every Wednesday and Saturday. Yeah. And that brings, you're able to do those things, then people are able to talk about it. When people are able to talk about it, then all of a sudden names like Tabor Academy, Governors, Brooks, you know, Middlesex, all of those schools come to the forefront a little bit more. And more for, you know, being like, wow, they're athletically, they're pretty good. I saw their lacrosse team play one time. They're pretty good.
Makes covering it a lot easier as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm a big fan of live streams. I think it should be a priority of all of ours, especially as we attract more kids from outside the area. You know, I was talking to a family from, I think, Vermont or something like that, and they asked me specifically about it. Yeah. So I think if we're going to become these schools that attract kids from different parts of the country, we have to offer things that people can access.
Jack, I have an idea. You and me, we call one of these games on a live stream together. Yes. What do you think?
Love to.
Let's come down to Tabor Academy. I'll get you set up nicely.
We'll pitch
down
it.
There.
We'll set it up. Yes. Listen, always thinking.
Let's do it.
Always. That would be a lot of fun. I'm not kidding. Let's do a Wednesday when there isn't a podcast because we kind of stack them, but we could do it. I'd do it.
That'd be a lot of fun.
That'd be really fun.
That would be a lot. I think
you have to do play by play though.
Okay.
Yes. Got it.
As long as I get a few words in.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So, Coach, this is going into your fifth year. Yeah. How have you changed as a coach? Yeah. And what are you looking to do differently this year to become a better coach?
Yeah. I think this year, I think last couple years actually have really, opened my eyes to a lot of different things about what I can do better. I think first and foremost this is a player-led team. I think in the past I didn't, not that I didn't allow it, but I just was like, oh, you know, maybe I have to lead. Now I'm like, no, you guys have to lead us. And if we're going to have any success this year, it has to come from the players. So that was the first thing I did this year. I was like, you guys are running this. Like, and they've been phenomenal. They've created two like box leagues at school. Like they got kids from all different walks of life playing, which is really cool. Whether they play lacrosse or not doesn't matter. You know, they have kids, baseball players playing lacrosse right now. So I think that's where I've grown the most. I think, in letting them kind of lead us and giving them some ownership of the program and the team and listening to their ideas and not always saying that we're going to use it, but more of like, hey, how can we work together and creating a very good experience? Because as I say to them, I'll still be there next year, right? This is your senior year. Let's make this the best senior year we can. So I think that's been my biggest thing this year as a coach is that. And I think, when I was 22, I was a yeller and, in people's faces, telling them, all these things. And over time, I think I've developed to not do that as much. I think I've tried to be like, push them when the time is right and to back off when it's not right. Because these are still 14 to 19-year-old kids. Their days are wild days. Every day is a new day for them. And I think I've really come to grow as a coach that way. And I would say the final thing is, for us to be successful in the ISL, you need kids to be bought in and you find different ways to do that. So we'll spend a lot of time this off season working on just that. So I think that those are kind of the ways that we have evolved as a coaching staff, especially over the last couple of years and trying to get this program and this team and especially this group of 27 guys or something like that to put their best foot forward.
I'm actually interested in what you talked about your day.
Yeah.
What is a game day like for you?
So we have the boys have to go for, if you're a freshman or sophomore, you have to go check in at breakfast. So you make sure you're at school on time and stuff like that. My day starts at like 8:15. Usually I'm in the office and, my boss is like, oh, you got to do this and this. And I try my best to work on it, but usually it's, I'm game planning. I'm thinking about what we need to do to beat, whoever we're facing that day. 11:15 every day I go and eat and then coaching staff will meet before the game and we'll roll the balls out at an hour before game time and I'll pace the field. I'll set it up because I'm a crazy person and that's just what I have to do. So
I do that too.
Yeah. That's just what I have to do to, mentally prepare and I'll make sure everything's set up and then the whistle blows and it's game time. And then afterwards, you just kind of decompress a little bit and watch the film. So it's never really, you don't really have too much downtime because, sometimes you're on dorm duty and you're watching film while you're doing dorm duty or, You know, you're going off to make sure your advisee is doing okay and, you know, in school and stuff like that. So you try to keep moving with the lacrosse piece, but there's also outside factors that will come in and try to steal those things away a little bit.
So there is film.
Yeah. We watch our film. Yeah, we'll watch our games.
All right. Well, I'll have to get a hold of that somehow this year.
Let me know. I'll include you on our huddle.
Oh, yeah. That's what I wanted. That's good. All right. I think, you know, Jack, unless you have one more question.
Yeah, I do have one more question. All right. And our producer, Saf, it's actually for you and RJ. But were you actually surprised to hear that this guy, Kyle, my co-host, he was a post-grad in high school, that he doesn't have any friends from post-grad? Oh, were you surprised to hear that? Because I certainly wasn't.
No comment.
I'll tell a story off mic as to why that is the case.
Okay, you can wait.
And we'll wait till we're done.
I will also say no comment. Yeah.
Oh, man.
RJ,
beat up this podcast.
I've heard a lot about you, and really a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for coming into studio. Yeah. Best of luck, and looking forward to the ISL kicking it off, and I can't wait for the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, and go Seawolves.
RJ Swift, named appropriately with his answers.
Swift.
Very swift.
Very swift. Very articulate.
It's a good thing we had a lot of questions. And listen, I tried to play the role of, if I had a kid, what can you tell me about Tabor? And I think he did a great job answering those questions. And you know, now I'm kind of excited for us to call a game because we put that out there and he didn't say no.
That would be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to it. And it'd be good lacrosse, good game. You know, what he brought up was very different and interesting with the ISL schools, summer day and summer boarding. And he told us part of his job is dorm duty, which is really... You really got to love that lifestyle to be, you know, working dorm duty at night.
Yeah, I got to be honest.
I have a lot of respect for him for that.
That can't be fun, man. I mean, even in the best situations, you're still kind of just looking for people to mess up, which is not, you know, great. But it's part of the job. It's part of everything he does. He's also in the admissions department as well. You know, I just think it's great to have a young coach on that has a clear vision for his program and, you know, puts his kids forward as best he can.
And he's going to be very successful because he loves what he does and he loves the boarding school experience.
Yeah, and he loves lacrosse, which if you're coming on this podcast, you better love lacrosse or you're going to get found out. So thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Pietelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.